When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bloody awesome. Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson from whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. And joining me from across the pond, he is the statesman to my kingsman. It's part two of this podcast, I guess. It's John Burke from burkereviews.com. How are you, sir? John, are you there? John, where are ya? I'm on a plane. Ah, of course. Haha, sound just like JB. John is not here this week, JB. For the second week in a row, we've had proximity issues on the BAMP. I was unavailable last week, and now JB is unavailable this week because he is currently en route to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, to say howdy, partner. Big Tuna, and get ready to cover the event for Disappointment Media and BurkeReviews.com. I believe the festival itself. Let me have a look. When does it run? It runs from March the 8th to the 16th. So JB's got an awful lot of work ahead of him. However, fear not, you will be hearing his thoughts on tonight's film. But South by Southwest, SXSW, would very much like to go to it one day. But in my absence, I shall live vicariously through John. But there's a couple of films I'm looking forward to seeing eventually. And I hope John and Big Tuna and the gang get to watch some or any of these. I know they've got a pretty packed itinerary, but Monkey Man, the Dev Patel kind of John Wick-esque, I know it's lazy to call it that, but John Wick-esque action film is appearing at the festival, and I picked out a few others which I'd quite like to check out at some point when I get a chance to do. I'd like to see Hood Witch, which stars Goldshifter Vadahani, who I always remember from Patterson. It's directed by Saeed Belktibia, and it's a film that kind of, it seems like it spans many genres, and it seems quite, well, unique, for want of a better term. So I'm quite looking forward to that. Looking forward to Cuckoo, Tillman Singer's genre flick, kind of horror, giallo horror flick starring Hunter Schafer and Dan Stevens. Hoping for good things from that. Alex Garland's Civil War as well. I'm a huge fan of Alex Garland, and I count Ex Machina and especially Annihilation as two of my favourite films in general. Basically, I think they're fantastic. And Civil War, from everything I've seen, looks very good. It looks like it's going to ruffle the right people up the wrong way. So I'm looking forward to that. And also The Fall Guy, Roadhouse, big films are dropping. But with festivals, JB will also attest, I'm always excited to discover the hidden gems, the films that went in with a low reputation, shall we say, or even none, and come out and cause the biggest surprises of them all. So I'm very excited to hear what JB has to say. He's going to be back for next week's episode. Fear not, guys, you're not going to be JB-less for all too long. But for this week, you've got my tones and a little bit of Burke a little bit later on. So if you're new to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, firstly, welcome. Each week we cover the week's biggest or most interesting or sometimes only film release, and we cover it in a non-spoiler way. And we're doing that exact same thing tonight. And I say we because you're going to hear my thoughts on tonight's film. And then John has sent his thoughts over as well. So you've got the all-round BAMP experience. And if it is your first show, we usually are together in the hot seat. But needs must on certain occasions. But let's not mess around anymore with talking. Let's get to the talking. Tonight's film is a big one. It's a huge film. Biggest film of the year so far, and maybe even the biggest film of the year. Dune Part 2. You're going to have to get used to me flitting between calling it Dune and Dune. I apologise in advance. I cannot help it. I'm British. So, Dune Part 2. Of course, it's the follow-up to Dune Part 1, which came out in 2021. And let's get to the tail of the tape, because that first film was very, very well received. Critically, it made very good money for such a heavy genre film as it is. And it was my number one film of 2021. I'll just mention that right now. But in terms of the tail of the tape, it is directed by the returning Denis Villeneuve. And it was written by Villeneuve and John Spates. And it stars a who's who of Hollywood. Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Lea Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård, Charlotte Rampling, Javier Bardem. Man, I think that's all of the big hitters, and a huge cast of supporting players, tertiary actors, and of course extras. But they are your front runners for the cast. Now, I said that obviously this is a part two. So what is the synopsis of Dune Part 2? Well, from Letterboxd, follow the mythic journey of Paul Atreides as he unites with Chani and the Fremen while on a path of revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the known universe, Paul endeavours to prevent a terrible future only he can foresee. If you haven't seen Dune Part 1, well, you ain't going to have a clue what happens in Dune Part 2, especially based on that synopsis. Check it out first. How is this film doing with the critics and the fans? Here we go. Rotten Tomatoes critic score currently sits at 93%. The audience score 95%. I'll get onto that in a minute. Metascore has this at a very good 79. The IMDb user score 9 out of 10. And oh boy, the Letterboxd score 4.6 out of 5. That is insanity. Insanely high scores for Dune Part 2. If you want to see this film, it is available to watch in theatres. It will be on Max at some point, I'm sure, but don't worry about that. It is in theatres. It is in IMAX. See it on the biggest screen you can do. This film demands it. Just any cinema screen you can find it on, as long as it's decent, go and watch this film there rather than waiting for it to drop to Max. Believe me. And you will thank me when you do. So let's get to it. What do I think about Dune Part 2? As I said, Dune Part 1 was my favourite film of 2021. I was captivated by its visuals, by its scope, the scale, and by the breadth of its story. And as somebody who has not read Frank Herbert's seminal novel, I wasn't sure what to expect. But I was blown away by the results of that first film. So now, 3 years later, it was due to come out last year, but the strikes and everything that was happening last year in Hollywood put paid to that. But that's okay. That's okay. We can wait for another few months. And, you know, we waited for 3 years. It's here, the follow-up. Part two is here. Director Denis Villeneuve, for me, over the past few years, has firmly established himself as Hollywood's premier visual director. Now, a lot of people would say, maybe Christopher Nolan, you know, the obvious choice amongst many others. But I think Villeneuve, who is a self-proclaimed visual director, absolutely is the premier visual director. You're thinking of Dune, Blade Runner 2049, and Arrival, just amongst those films. And then you go back, and they're just the sci-fi films. You go back to Prisoners, your Enemy, Sicario, and, you know, the guy's filmography in the last 11 years is insane. It is insanely good. And the size of the films this dude is putting out in what is a short amount of time. Denis himself has said he doesn't want to rush making films because, you know, he wants to live them. He wants to live that film and he doesn't feel like he should rush the process. But he has been, you know, pumping out big films in a fairly short amount of time. Which surprised me, but Dune Part 2, absolutely continues the run with a delicious aplomb. Absolutely, in terms of visual direction, Dune Part 2 is insanely good. It somehow manages to up the ante in every aspect as well, including performances, to deliver a simply breathtaking experience. For everyone listening, I did not watch Dune Part 2. I experienced it. Now, that is my pretentious hat on, but I do not care. I experienced this film. It is a film that is, you know, lighter on dialogue as a Villeneuve staple, but it is heavy thematically. It's heavy with its visual artistic interpretations of the story, visual direction, as we've already mentioned. The music does so much here. And whilst it's light on dialogue, the dialogue is still quite thick. It is very lore heavy. And I mean, I did get lost a few times trying to remember who's that, who's this, who's that, who's that, what are they talking about, what prophecy is that. But I was so swept up in what was happening in this film that I didn't mind, because I could pick up what was happening. You know, you didn't need, you know, exposition left, right, and center. You didn't need dialogue dumps for this to work. And I did experience this. Yeah, I really did. There are moments in this which I was in awe of. There is a moment where Paul Atreides, played by Timothy Chalamet, rides a sandworm, and it is insane. You feel like you are there on the back of that worm riding it. I swore I had sand in my eyes and in my trousers by the time I'd finished this film. But you really do get swept up in some of these moments, and it's a credit to everybody involved. You know, from its beautiful visuals we mentioned, to the awe-inspiring sound design. The sound design is incredible, and the fantastic production design. This film was an absolute joy to behold. And listen, it's not, you know, everyone seems to be saying that, and I'm always wary about going to a film which has near universal acclaim, even if I was one of those voices in regards to the first film, because you just don't want to be disappointed. And I was so pleased that I wasn't. I really, really was so pleased that I came out of this in a overly positive mood. Now, the production design as well. Ooh, as I mentioned, the costumes, the look of this thing. Ugh! And the story this time around focuses on larger, deeper thematic strands. And it definitely picks up the story of Part 1 and it continues with it. It takes it to new and exciting and also pretty scary places as we continue following our lead, Paul Atreides, who is played with a confident steel by Timothy Chalamet. You know, Willy Wonka's not in the Chocolate Factory anymore, man. You know, I think this is one of Chalamet's best performances alongside maybe his work in Bones and All. I think it's very good. In Dune Part 1, you could look at it and say he wasn't the standout because there are so many big performances and he had his moments in that film, but it was much more of an ensemble. Here he is leading the way and I think he's very, very good at doing so. And, you know, everyone has a part to play in this film and they play their roles with such gusto and confidence. Austin Butler is fantastic here. You know, Austin, he didn't speak in his Elvis inflection as he seems to in the role of Fade Rauther Harkonnen, but he plays this role. I mean, they describe him as a psychopath, and it's quite easy, I think, to oversell the psychopath and go crazy and, you know, kind of all bug-eyed and wild, but you know Austin Butler really he reins it in, and he generally has a presence about him. He looks terrifying and he plays his role really well. In this film, I just wish we'd got a little bit more of him. And with Josh Brolin, when he arrives as Gurney Halleck, loved seeing Josh Brolin. Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica Atreides. I love where the development here is going. Again, guys, I haven't read the books. I can kind of see where it's going based on this film. But so in terms of development, you know, I haven't read the books just to know where it's all going. So here, really, really enjoyed the duplicitous, the ambiguity of what we're seeing from her. And then newcomers, Florence Pugh, Leia Seydoux, fantastic. You know, in Christopher Walken, it doesn't go full Walken, thankfully. I was a little worried that he would go full Walken and think he was in the David Lynch version of the film, but he does not. But everybody here pulls up trees, and Zendaya is given her so much more to do in this film as Chani than she was in the first film. You know, she's a warrior, but there's much more to her. She isn't just there as a spare part. She isn't there as this doting, loving interest either. There's an awful lot going on with her character, which I found to be so interesting. And it all sets up the next film. It all Dune Messiah, which Villeneuve has confirmed he's writing, and has also confirmed he's not going to talk about it because, as he mentioned, he likes to live these things. He only wants to talk about his films when they're done, when they're ready to be released to the world, which I respect. But he is currently writing Dune Messiah, but has also said he's not going to rush it. Now, I can't wait because, look, visual director said it ad nauseum, but there are plenty of smaller character moments that pay off handsomely by the end of this movie. But I will say, the last 20, 25 minutes, did they feel a little bit rushed in getting to where they needed to be? I think so. I think they did. I think where they didn't want to maybe release a 3-hour film, which I would have absolutely loved. I do think that those final 20 minutes had a little bit too much trimmed off to where things just kind of happened and happened and happened because they had to get to this point of the film before they finished. I would have loved an extra 10 minutes just to have some of those moments, especially in those final moments, to just breathe a bit more, just so we could sit with the ramifications of what was happening. But, you know, that I wouldn't disagree with anybody else who said that either. But the ending was such a satisfying conclusion and a tantalizing follow-up, as we mentioned, to the third part. And it's called Dune Messiah, and without spoiling anything, the Messiah aspect of that film is going to be massive, as part two deals with this messianic revolution bumping up against more grounded principles, less religious principles and ideas, and how they can't coexist together, and how, yeah, and the fallout from it is going to be, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be hard for any other film this year to top Dune Part 2 in terms of its majesty, in terms of its scale and epicness. Dune Part 2 is one of the best science fiction films I have seen in years, and it continues the idea that a potential trilogy of a story that was once thought to be unfilmable could end up being one of the greatest film trilogies ever made, most definitely be one of the greatest sci-fi or genre trilogies ever made. Time will tell, of course, whether that's the case. However, whatever the case will be, Dune Part 2 is a thrilling, exciting, heavy, intelligent science fiction movie that deserves to be celebrated for years to come. Now, what they do here is it just makes so many other films feel tiny in comparison. Even stylistic choices like a scene in a gladiatorial arena just add so much to the alien, well, for want of a better term, no pun intended, alien qualities and aspects of this film. You know, it is a marvel. It really, really is a fantastic, fantastic film. Now, look, I could go on until the cows come home. I'm going to take a little sit back now and hear what John Burke has to say about it. And disclaimer, I have no idea what John thinks about this film. The audio you're about to hear, I have not heard yet. So I will be kind of, quote unquote, reacting to it once JB has finished. So that's it for me. JB, take it away with your thoughts on Dune Part 2.
Dune Part 2 is visually stunning. The sound design is incredible. I honestly think the performances are top tier, and it's a marvel of fantasy / sci-fi filmmaking that definitely pays off seeing it on the big screen, which we say that about most movies here on the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, but with Denis Villeneuve and Christopher Nolan, those two guys make movies to be seen in theaters, and that lives up to the hype with this, especially. I did not see it in IMAX. I saw it at a Dolby screening, and I mean, the sound alone, like the sandworm ride sequence in the Dolby theater, shook the living crap out of all of us, because the sound in those theaters is insane, and I can't imagine just watching that scene at home and not feeling it. It feels like you were watching alongside of Javier Bardem and Zendaya as Timothée Chalamet's character gets the worm and is just... That sounds terrible, by the way. There's so much innuendo in this movie. But...
Nope.
I did see that scene in IMAX, though, because I went to the re-release of Dune Part 1 in IMAX, and they had that scene was in the credits. They gave us that sequence. So I actually have seen that scene twice and in two different large format screenings, and both times I was blown away by it. I think the movie is totally successful. One thing I think it does really well, much like David Lynch's Dune from 84, is it makes me want to know more about the lore. I don't fully understand everything. I had to watch Dune Part 1 twice to really have a grasp of what was going on. It helped that I've seen Dune 1984 twice. And even still, I don't know if I could give someone a summary of all of the things that are happening in this movie. I have got the audiobook. I have not started it yet. It is something on my list of things to listen to, but it's like 21 hours, and it's the start of many books, so I don't know how dedicated I truly am to that, but I do think this is a film that just shows the power of storytelling and filmmaking and visualization of a story. I've obviously, not having read the book, I don't know how accurate it is, and I've heard a lot of people, there's some changes made and things. Some of those changes are very clearly motivated because of the time that it's being released, that it makes sense to adjust certain elements of it. From my vibe of the Lynch version, which I also am to understand is very different from the book, but they are adapting it to their sensibilities, which I think makes a good adaptation. I don't necessarily need it to be a one-for-one if it feels organic to the filmmaker, and I do think that is the case with Villeneuve's Dune. I also think Lynch's as well. I would say I'm a fan of the Lynch version. I know that's kind of a up and down opinion, but I do think the Villeneuve versions are better. But I also think he had obviously the opportunity to do two movies. Lynch condensed a very long book into one 2.5-hour movie, and Villeneuve got to do basically a 5-hour movie between the two parts, and we're supposed to get a third one, apparently. The cast in this is insane, though, right? Like, I mean, I mentioned a few names already, but, like, Rebecca Ferguson, Florence Pugh is in this, Christopher Walken's just being Christopher Walken, but, you know, he's getting up there. It's still cool to see him, even if he doesn't put anything outside of just doing the Walken shtick, which I couldn't help but laugh during the movie, that he's just being Christopher Walken while these other people are trying pretty hard to, like, invest in this world. Josh Brolin, I thought Austin Butler was phenomenal in this. And he's doing a Stellan Skarsgård impression, which is appropriate because his uncle is Stellan Skarsgård in the movie, who's incredible anyways. But the very first time he's on screen, he does sound a little bit like Elvis, Austin Butler. And then immediately, though, for the rest of the movie, he's got the Skarsgård impersonation down pat, where there were times I wasn't sure who we were hearing speak, if it was him or Skarsgård. And I think Batista's solid in this. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else worth mentioning. Zendaya is the backbone, though. I do think this is one of Chalamet's best performances, but I think Zendaya brings so much to this film in terms of emotion, in terms of the story itself, but also just her performance. I really have grown to like her, and if she's in a movie, I'm definitely inclined to give it a go. Between the Spider-Man trilogy and the two Dune movies, she's obviously a great blockbuster filmmaker, a superstar. And I look forward to seeing her in a smaller movie that's coming out, Challengers, I think is what it's called, this year. That looks great as well. And despite this being a huge movie with this gigantic cast, they still managed to almost surprise us with a few things. It kind of leaked before the movie came out, which is disappointing, but that's an impressive feat in and of itself because of the scale of this movie, and I think that's one of the things all other blockbusters should pay attention to with Dune, is they shot on location, in real space, and not real outer space, just real locations, real physical place where the actors are interacting with the environment, and you can feel the difference. I am not one who is anti-CG. I there are times where it's executed much better. But I am, the more I pay attention to the real locations and the real settings, the more I realize how important it is to storytelling. It plays a major factor if it feels like these people are in a space versus it being clearly a digital, you know, fictitious space. And I'm sure there's a lot of advantages to doing the digital stuff. Obviously, for some places, you can't go physically. That's the argument for, like, Quantumanium, but that didn't work, right? Like, that failed. And it's, if you want to do something like that, you have to allow for the digital artist time to create that digital space. But if you're just creating a space that isn't real, like Arrakis, but there are places on our planet that look like the way it's described, go to those places and make that work. And Villeneuve succeeds so well with that. And obviously, I assume the sky and stuff, those are digitally enhanced, and that looks great. Nolan does the same thing, right? Nolan will, you know, use CG sparingly to add things. George Miller with Mad Max Fury Road, an incredible use of CG mixed with real space. And when you see that work, and then you watch something that's done like on the volume or on a traditional green screen set and everything is reproduced, it just doesn't have the same feel. And that, I think, is one of the biggest triumphs of this movie getting made, is that Villeneuve got to actually take them on location and film these desert sequences. It makes a huge difference. And obviously, the sandworms. I don't know what the wrangling code is for having giant worms around your cast. Obviously, joke, they're not real. They're CG, but they don't, man, they feel real. I don't know if any part of it was real. Like, I know for Pacific Rim, Guillermo del Toro had a giant boot made, not the entire robot, but a boot to give some sense of depth to the characters in the space so that it would blend with the CG. I don't know if any of that was done with the worm, if there was some like giant structure. I haven't seen any behind the scenes stuff yet, really, but I wouldn't be surprised. One of my favorite Nolan things, so always I keep going back to Nolan just because the two guys are in my head kind of connected. Inception, right? The hallway sequence. That didn't have to be built the way they built it, but they built it and they made this giant spinning hallway, and it's one of my favorite behind the scenes things ever because it's insane that it happened. And that's one of the things about filmmaking. It's like, we do like that you can create something that doesn't exist and make it real in a movie. It's way more impressive when it's partially real than if it's all created in a computer. And again, someone has to make that. I'm not meaning to throw any shade at digital artists or anything like that. It's still getting made and it's still a challenge, but we have seen that studios don't give the digital artists time to really render the content in a way that feels created. It just looks rushed, it looks sloppy, it looks bad. Case in point, see the new Godzilla X Kong trailer where the world looks fake everywhere, and a lot of it is. And at that point, why not make an animated film? Because animated films are great, you know. So if you're gonna just have things not look like the real world, or not, or things that are supposed to be the real world not look it, then why bother making it in the real world? Make it animation. Make it look, you know, if that's what you're going for, then do that. And again, I think there's an argument can be made for blended stuff, and it can look really cool. But a lot of times, it looks muddy. It looks sloppy. It looks separate. It doesn't look like it's going for the aesthetic that it's achieving, and that's a problem. That's not the case with Dune Part 2, and that's one of the things that makes it stand out. You feel the difference, and for a blockbuster to be able to do that and still deal with issues, I mean, the movie moves rapidly at times and then it slows at other times, and there's a lot of story being condensed into this film still, despite it being broken into two parts. And it's dense, and so I can definitely see why some people might check out or find it boring. I did not. I haven't seen this a second time yet, but I do think, much like the first, I think my appreciation of it will grow on repeated viewings. But the fact that it is long does make that repeated viewing more of a challenge, right? Like, I have not been... I've had the opportunity, I suppose, to go see it a second time, and I haven't taken it just because I'm like, well, it's going to be 2 hours and 40 minutes plus 20 minutes of trailers at my local theater. I don't know if I want to give 3 hours to a movie I already have seen, so I haven't yet. But I do think it's great. I'm really happy for everyone involved, because I think we're going to see this movie do what Oppenheimer did last year, which would be crazy because this is coming out now in March. If it makes it to the Oscars and it's still the best film, and it, to be fair, when you look at the slate of movies this year, it doesn't have nearly the competition that Oppenheimer has had, and yet it feels like it's the same scale, and it's that same, you know, when you look at Nolan's career and you look at Villeneuve's career, they've had a very similar trajectory. They've been referenced, they've been on the brink of being acknowledged. You know, you have Sicario getting a lot of love, you had Arrival get snubbed in places that I cannot believe, Prisoners, it was just so good. Blade Runner 2049, I really like a lot, but I can understand why that one didn't get the same type of prestige that the Dune movies are getting. But this does have that, to not just compare to Nolan, but the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings kind of triumph feel to it. Like, oh my god, you adapted the inadaptable. And I hope to see this movie continue to get love. If you haven't seen Dune Part 2, I recommend it. And again, sorry for the change in format. Hopefully, as the year starts to settle down, Matt and I will be able to synchronize our podcasting to the normal Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast format that you're used to. But for now, that's my take on Dune Part 2.
Yep, what that guy said at the end. We'll get back to that. It's only been 2 weeks. We've been doing this for nearly 6 years. We'll be fine. Yeah, John liked it then by the sounds of it. And I was listening in on that, making a few notes. And the interesting that JB, you know, believe that Christopher Walken was being Walken. There are, obviously, he was doing the walk. He was walking the walk, if you will. But I think he managed to, well, then he managed to rein him in just enough to not go full on Christopher Walken, as we know. The Skarsgård impression by Austin Butler is insane, how he managed to get his voice to sound like that. And yes, when you do first hear him, you can hear Elvis. And goddamn, Austin, I hope you drop that Elvis very soon. I'm hoping you pull through and drop that twang. But the leaks that came out early did ruin a couple of moments in the film. They ruined moments in the film, but it wasn't quite as impactful as maybe it could have been. And the location shooting, absolutely. This is filmed in the Wadi Rum in Jordan and in Abu Dhabi. And some of the Harkonnen stuff is filmed in Hungary. And it's incredible. Of course, it's been augmented with CG, but it's amazing what you can do if you just go out and film on location. I'm sure the actors were put through it a little bit, but this is what you get. And I remember Chalamet saying Dune was the best film he thinks he's been in. You know, I wonder what he thinks about Part 2. And hearing the praise from the cast about working on this film is fantastic to hear. And in terms of repeat viewing, it's a funny one because it's currently made 200 million plus at the box office. It's on course to make more than the first film, potentially 600 or 700 maybe, for a big old long film. And how much of that will be repeat viewing? That's the thing. That is exactly. When I watched Dune, I saw it once at the Warner Brothers headquarters in London, and I didn't watch it again for a little while afterwards. I waited till it came out on Blu-ray. So I saw it first on a big screen with the best sound. And then saw it on Blu-ray. I let my love for it sort of dissipate a little bit so I could go back to it rather than kind of binging on it now. I want to go and watch Part 2 again, but I feel like I'm going to hold it at arm's length for a bit because it's so big. It's so damn good. And interestingly, I was reading the Hollywood Reporter dropped a article by Pamela McClintock recently, a few days ago, saying that Dune Part 2 has made major gains with younger adults. And 34% of Dune Part 1's opening weekend audience were between 18 to 35 years old, 34% of them. This time around, 50% of the audience on that opening weekend were between 18 to 35. Now, obviously, we mentioned the SAG-AFTRA strikes last year, which meant that had it come out last year, Part 2, they wouldn't have been able to promote it. And that meant no Zendaya, no Chalamet, no Austin Butler, no Florence Pugh out there doing the rounds. Now, of course, they can absolutely utilise and weaponise those extremely talented young stars. And it's working. The percentage of opening weekend ticket buyers who are between the ages of 18 and 25 jumped up from 14% to 18%, and from 20% to 28% for those between 26 and 35. And yeah, the 18 to 35 demo are considered key because they are the most frequent moviegoers. So people of all ages are coming out to watch this film, and you have these young stars in it. But like John said, they buy into it. They encapsulate their roles. You know, I don't see Zendaya. I see Charney. I don't see Florence Pugh. I don't see Austin. I definitely don't see Austin Butler. Goddamn, that transformation. But that is great news for a film which is, again, like JB said, it's not for everyone. It will not be for everyone. It will turn people off. It will be too long. It will be too cumbersome. It will be too heavy. It will be too slow. But to hear that people are coming out in their droves to watch it is huge for cinema, let alone genres. It's huge for cinema. I hope to all hope that Dune Part 2 can surpass Part 1 in terms of box office and become a box office success. And yeah, I think this, I'm so sad it didn't make the Oscars this year, because this against Oppenheimer would have been absolutely fascinating. But as it stands, yeah, this is the front runner for all of the Oscars next year to pull a Return of the King. But let's see what's coming out in the rest of the year. For now, though, Dune Part 2 gets a thumbs up from the both of us. And we are going to rank this one as, funnily enough, bloody awesome. Now, we would usually move on to Concessions of a Cinephile. But my good friend and esteemed co-host is on his way to Texas, as we've already mentioned. So instead, we'll start wrapping up now the show. All I'll say is, in terms of media consumption, this week I've watched a few films. I've watched, before that, I've been listening and watching Double Toasted. I watched the Dead Meat 2023 Horror Awards. Great production this time. Each year it gets bigger and more expansive and more expensive, should I say. You know, great guests on there as well, and it's a joy to see the greatest genre out there being recognised on a wide scale. You know, it's had well over 500,000 views, and as they say, and as I agree and have said before, if the Oscars are going to ignore horror and look down on it, then it's up to the Saturn Awards, it's up to the Fandango Chainsaw Awards, it's up to the Dead Meat Horror Awards to champion the genre, which deserves far more credit than some of the higher-ups will give it. So, in terms of films, I've watched The Tiger's Apprentice, an animated Paramount animation film with Henry Golding, Michelle Yeoh, amongst many others, doing voices. It's about a kid who finds out he is the next in line to take on mystical powers, shall we say, in the form of an animal. Wonder which one. And it's okay, it's fine, you know, it's decent. It's just felt a little bit by numbers at times, and I wasn't overly impressed. I've seen much better animated films in recent years. I watched Drive Away Dolls, which John covered last week, and again, I thought it was good. I thought it was good. It's a good film. It's a good film, but it didn't have a hook there. It didn't quite drag me in like I hoped and thought it would do. And I have also been catching up on films I haven't seen from the end of last year in the US or released over here at the beginning of 2024 in the UK. So I finally watched The Holdovers and loved it. I get what the hype is about. Paul Giamatti, Divine Joy Randall, fantastic. Such a good film. It crushed me by the end of it, but great film. All of Us Strangers, thought that was a very, very good film as well. I watched American Fiction with Jeffrey Wright and thought that was fantastic. Damn, these Oscars are going to be tough to really pick. Now, I still think my choices are going to win. Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer, even though I want Past Lives to win. But, you know, I can see Jeffrey Wright sneaking it. I can see Giamatti sneaking it, man. I don't think it's going to happen, because I think the Cillian Murphy train has left the station. But I can see it happening. And I've got a few more to catch up on. I've got Late Night with the Devil I'm going to watch. I've got Infested, a new film coming out, which I'm looking forward to, thanks to Shudder. And I'm going to be catching up on a few more in the next few weeks. So I can't wait to get back with JB to talk about some films and find out how he's been staying bloody awesome. He's been staying bloody awesome by going to Texas for South by Southwest. I've been staying bloody awesome by going on a immersive Starship experience in London yesterday called Bridge Command. Go to bridgecommand.space to find out more about that. And having chicken wings in the evening, you know, just unlimited chicken wings. So spaceships and chicken, that's my kind of way of living. So let's call it a day there for the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast this week. Again, if you're new to the show, it is usually a wee bit more structured, obviously with a bit more back and forward conversation. We dive into other topics during the week as well. But as it's just me, I don't want to chew your ears off too much. But I will. What I will do before I leave is tell you that next week we are going to be covering Imaginary, the new film by the director of Truth or Dare. So Jeff Wadlow, I'm imagining Imaginary could be not great, but I am willing to go into it with an open mind and hope, as a horror genre stan and fan, that it's at least decent. But hey guys, we'd love to know what you think about Dune Part 2. I loved it. John did as well. Let us know what you thought. Find us across social media on X at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. On Instagram, Threads and TikTok, just search Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. On Facebook, we are at Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. We're also on the Tomato Meter. We are a Rotten Tomatoes approved podcast, so keep your eye out on the Tomato Meter. And we aim to amend it one way or another, for better or for worse, for rotten or for fresh reasons. If you want to find me, you can do, just go to whatiwatchtonight.co.uk and search for What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd. And if you want to find John, go over to burkereviews.com and just search for Burke Reviews across all of the socials and Letterboxd as well. And JB also writes for our buddy Big Tuna's website, Disappointment Media. So do go check out the incredible work those guys do over there. And we hope you like what we're doing here. We've been doing this for a long old time now. Like John said, we'll be back to our regular scheduling very, very soon. But in the meantime, we would dearly love if you could spare us 2 seconds and drop us a 5-star rating and review if your podcast provider of choice lets you do it. But those 5 stars really do help the show grow. It gets more listeners in. It gets us up those listening lists. And we get to hear from more film fans each and every week. But with that, guys, I'm going to do John's bit as well. As always, stay bloody awesome and keep watching movies. Blood, 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 bloody, 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 blood, blood, bloody. Awesome.